morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. I hope everybody's doing well. I am doing fantastic, which is surprising considering the last three, 4 nights it's been a cavalcade of just the old game of who's going to barf tonight in my house? Who's going to wake me up at 2 a.m. and let me know that they're not feeling good and just getting sick everywhere? First night, it was just a little baby sitting beside me. I'm like, whoa, okay, we got a baby barfing right beside us. And it's just trickled its way through the house. One kid after the other kid after the other kid. And it's not great, you know, cleaning up, you know, sheets in the middle of the night and doing laundry and trying to not wake up everybody else while also trying to have some decorum and, you know, soothe the child. But it is what it is. And last night, I think I had reached my breaking point and I rolled over and I said, can you handle this one, honey? I really got to get up in the morning. And lovely, beautiful wife that she is, she said, I got this. Don't worry about it. So she took care of the barfing child last night that I think was Sophia. Yeah, because Estelle came and got me. But yeah, it's been a wild last couple days. And on top of that, the trade deadline. I got to do the trade deadline at Bleach Report with Benedict Arnold. Traitor, treasonous himself, Tim Wurzberger, joined me on Bleach Report. He graced me with his appearance, but it was a lot of fun. We got to break down all the trades. I thought this podcast alone was going to be just trade deadline breakdowns. Which GMs fumbled the ball? Which GMs, you know, pushed their teams closer to a Stanley Cup? Who was moved? The returns, all that stuff. But then there was a game Sunday night, and I was glued to the TV. And I had my playoff game for my men's league Sunday night, so I had to do a rewatch. And I don't usually do this. I get home from my Sunday night men's league, which was playoffs by the way, and we lost, which is a whole issue because, and I don't want to blame it on the referees, but the ref threw out one of our best players in the beginning of the second period, and we were winning. We were having a good game. As soon as that guy gets kicked out, we go from having one strong line and then one very, very weak line to having one okay line and still one very, very weak line. And we're playing a team that has two good lines and one okay line. And it just, our team was shambles. We couldn't recover. We pushed it to 3-3 and we needed to win. So we're pushing a little bit. They got the 4-3 winner right at the end of the game. And that was that. But boy, oh boy, was that ref just horrendous. I don't usually complain about refs very often. Throws a guy at a men's league for arguing about a penalty. He didn't get thrown out for a dirty hit. He didn't get thrown out for anything on ice related during the play. He gets tripped, a blatant trip. He looks up at the ref. He goes, where's the call? Maybe his language a little bit more colorful, but instead of the ref de-escalating, he dumps fuel on the fire and starts getting it into it with the guy on my team. And I'm sitting there literally from you to me away. Well, who knows where you're listening, but from me to the computer away, he's like closing the gap. I'm like, ref, skate away. Then first he gives him a 10-minute misconduct. I was like, just give him 2 minutes. Give him a penalty. We need him. And then my guy's like, what do you do? Like, still arguing. And then he throws him out of the game. It's a men's league playoff game. And he throws him out of the game because the guy's upset about getting a penalty. His language wasn't even that colorful. Anyway, so we lost. Moving on. Like I said, I was going to do a podcast about the trade deadline. And I still will touch on that because I do firmly believe some GMs need to be held accountable for their actions or lack thereof. But then I get home from a men's league game. I'm a little hot. I'm checking the ESPN Plus app. I'm like, okay, what's going down? Who's winning? Who's losing? And I see the box score of the Sabres and the Lightning. And I go, well, this is an interesting one. And I don't do this at all, ever. I go back and I rewatch this game and I start watching it at 10 o'clock. I'm up to 1 a.m. watching this game. And it was fantastic. And people always say, oh, you know, hockey is so funny. You always just have these sayings. And, you know, maybe you think about, maybe don't they don't say it. Maybe I'm just doing this for the podcast. But I have heard that we look into things and all these little things, the meaningful points in the season, and maybe they don't mean that much. I will tell you right now, unequivocally, going into that Sunday night game, it was a big game. The top two teams in the Atlantic Division, Sabres and the Tampa Bay Lightning, I think they were tied with 82 points apiece. Two teams that arguably are the two contenders, the two favorites to come out of the Eastern Conference. Two drastically different mindsets. The Tampa Bay Lightning were coming into that game saying, okay, we need to squash this little kid. We need to test them. We need to push them. We need to put them in their place. We need to show them that this is our conference. We're the Tampa Bay effing Lightning. You do not come and take our crown when we're still at the top of the pile. That's their mindset. They're coming in to Buffalo to dominate, to bully, to win the game, and to get back to Florida. The Sabres, on the other hand, they're coming into this game to prove something. We're tied with the Lightning. There's only 20 games left in the season. We're here. We're queer. Deal with it. And they want to stand their ground. They want to stand up to the bully and say, listen, this not this year, baby. Like, we're a new team. Maybe in years before you could have rolled us, but not this year. And the puck drops. And it was the mentality of the Tampa Bay Lightning where it was, we're literally going to go through you. This wasn't a skill first period. This was a first period of the Tampa Bay Lightning saying, we're going to run you through the boards. After every whistle, there will be a scrum. And we will initiate it. And you're going to take face washes. You're going to take jersey jabs. You're going to take slashes, cross checks in the back of the back. It was everything and more you could imagine. It looked like a playoff game in the first period. There was hatred. There was fighting. And in years of old, and correct me if I'm wrong, the Sabres might have backed down. They might have flinched a little bit, but not this year. And the beautiful thing I loved about this, it was their captain. It was their beautiful, beautiful, redheaded, smooth-skating captain, Rasmus Dahlin, that just stepped up and filled the void. And he fills the void in a big way. He got abused this whole game, mind you. But he was the tip of the spear for the Buffalo Sabres, where Darren Radish and him were going at it. Rasmus Dahlin had enough, and he drops the mitts. The guy doesn't fight. He shouldn't fight. He's a Norris-level defenseman year on year on year. He is one of the best defensemen in the game. And he's the guy who starts to charge for the Buffalo Sabres. It was almost like enough is enough. I need to set the tone. Darren Radish, he slashes Tuck, and then Brandon Hagel comes in, and there's this big scrum, and Dahlin grabs Radish, and they fight. And he's not a fighter, mind you, but it sends the tone. And if you're on the Sabres bench and you're watching this, and your first line is out there, and your best defenseman and captain is out there, and they're going to battle, and they're doing these things, holy hell, does it jack you up, man. Like, it gets you going. If you can watch those guys do it, you're like, oh, here we go. Like, away we go. And so that fight gets out of the way. Next thing you know, Buffalo's on the board. Josh Stone on the power play, 1-0 for the Buffalo Sabres. In the first period, other than that one goal, it's scrums, it's fights, it's hits, it's after the whistle. It's literally every whistle, there's scrums. And this is Tampa Bay Lightning trying to get under the Sabres' skin, trying to make them blink, trying to get them off their game. Eric Chernak fights Sam. Who did he fight? No, Eric Chernak gets fighter later in the game. Sam Carrick fights Sabarin, and then Brandon Hagel fights Peyton Krebs. And then there was a bunch of roughing and misconducts and Kesserling and Kucherov slashing guys and Samuelson and Bowen Byram. It was just a mess. And then the second period drops and it's Kesserling and Chernak. And then Corey Perry and Malenstein fight. And they're all great fights because there's hatred. There is absolute hatred between these two teams. The intensity was there. The rivalry has begun. And this is where you think the Sabres blink, because weaved into all these penalties, the Sabres methodically are taking advantage of the opportunities that they're given. Because, like I said, Tampa is being very aggressive after the whistle. They're slashing, they're hitting, they're face washing. So the Sabres are getting power plays. They get 1-0 power play goal, 2-0 power play goal, 3-0 power play goal. Corey Perry answers back on a neat, tidy little backhand goal, by the way. Then Alex Tuck gets a shorthanded goal, 4-1. It's 4-1. The Sabres have 4 special teams goals. And this is where you think, okay, now it's really going to get out of hand, right? 4-1, midway through the second. Now Tampa is just going to, even if they haven't already, they're going to pedal to the metal, goon it up. Nah, not so fast. Not so fast. Nikita Kucherov on that very same power play scores. Then you can tell the tide starts to shift a little bit. Zemgus Girgensson back home scores a nice one in the slot. JJ Mosier, he capitalizes off a turnover. It's now 4-4 at the end of the second period. And this is the gut check time. These guys go back into the locker room. It's 4-4. You were up 4-1. This game should be done. Bed. Put this baby to bed. We get the W. We just have to ride it out for a period and a half. All of a sudden, holy hell, the Lightning score 3 goals in 5 minutes and we have to go into this locker room. It's gut check time. I'd be so interested to be a fly on that wall who stood up and just started reading the riot act. Or was it confidence? Were they just, you know, we got this. This is what we've worked for. We're a different team this year. Well, whatever it did, it did not work because the third period starts and Nikita Kucherov comes out of the gate 1 minute in and scores. It's 5-4. 5 minutes later, Brandon Point scores. Holy, 6-4. Damn. Game's over, right? Here comes the old Sabres. We tried, we pushed, we gave it a good show, but this is Tampa's conference. Second best ain't bad. Not so fast. Sam Carrick scores 30 seconds after Brandon Point. 6-5. And Brandon Hagel, I'm going to talk about him in a second, makes it 7-5. There's 10 minutes left in the game at 7-5 Tampa Bay. This is it. Game over. Like, this is 2-time Stanley Cup champion, 4 in a row Stanley Cup appearances. Tampa Bay should ice this no problem. Kucherov, Hedman, Gensel, Hagel, Point, McDonough, Chernak. Like, these are playoff-tested vets who know how to close out a game. Not so fast. Oh, captain, my captain, Rasmus Dahlin. Gordie Howe hat trick. He gets him an inch closer, 7-6. Jason Tucker on a breakaway, 7-7. We're going overtime. No. 1 minute later, Josh Doan on the power play seals the win for the Buffalo Sabres, 8-7. The crowd goes wild. I go nuts at 1 in the morning, sitting in the living room trying to be quiet. I'm jacked up. The Sabres ice this game, 8-7, and arguably win the greatest regular season game we have seen in the NHL in a long time. Definitely this year. Arguably, this was the best game of all sports all season. Playoffs included. This game had everything you wanted and more. There were goals. There were lead changes. There was fights. There was animosity. There was beautiful, you know, offensive play weaved throughout. It was a Shakespearean drama, top to bottom from start to end. It was an awesome, awesome game. And I talk about galvanizing a team. This is it. If we look back, if fast forward 3 months, 4 months, and the Sabres are in the Stanley Cup Finals or have won the Stanley Cup, and we go, gosh, what was the moment? Like, was it, you know, in December when they fired Kevin Adams and they go on this huge winning streak? Well, you know, was it that? It's this game right here. It's this game, March 8th, I think it was, and they stood up to Tampa Bay, took Tampa's best shots, and continued to roll through them. And that's it. This is galvanizing. I talk about loving to be in the locker room. How fun would it have been to be in that locker room after they get that W? With all these young kids and all these, you know, kind of veterans who have been there a few years, the Thompsons, the Doans, the Zuckers, and then you weave in there a Josh Doan who's just been a revelation. You think these guys miss J.J. Paterka? Not a chance. Not a chance whatsoever. Like, this was a great game. An absolutely beautiful game. And if you're not on the bandwagon yet, you need to be. Like, this team is good. And it wasn't, you know, just the top guys. It was everybody. Tage Thompson out there throwing hits. Like, every time he was on the ice, you could tell he was involved. He had bought in. Like, he was finishing checks. He was in the scrums. He was doing everything he could to lead his team. It was Dahlin. It was Thompson. It was Zucker. It was everybody. New addition Sam Carrick was playing a big game. The Logan Stanley up in the press box throwing threats out. Like, well, we play these guys again in April. We'll see what happens then. Scotty Sabourin should watch out. Going to be a little tougher guy than Sam Carrick. So it was just a fantastic game. Going back to the Tampa Bay Lightning, Brandon Hagel. You know, I talked about Max Domi when he attacked, was it Ridley Gregg from Ottawa last week, how much of a dirtbag he is? Because he just jumps guys and doesn't stop and just keeps throwing. There was a play here, I think it was the second period, when Hagel grabbed Dahlin. They got tied up. Darlene stuck him, cross-checked him in the neck, whatever. You know, tensions are high. Hagel, for whatever reason, just snaps. And oddly enough, this is the anniversary. It was the same day of the Todd Bertuzzi attack on Steve Moore, where he grabs him from behind, punches him in the back of the head, drives his head into the ice, breaks bones in his back. You know, just a terrible, terrible thing. So Hagel goes absolutely crazy and grabs Rasmus Dahlin and just starts throwing haymakers from behind. And Dahlin is obviously not engaging. He looks Hagel right in the head, right in the eye, and goes, I'm like, no, I have my gloves on. We're not doing this. Hagel was not taking no for an answer and just starts swinging away, which is nuts, which is absolutely crazy. And he gets 3, 4, 5, 6 just unobstructed bombs to the back of Darlene's head. Darlene goes down. A pile up ensues. The goaltender for Buffalo jumps in. Like, it was, rightfully so, it was a lot. And he gets 4 minutes. Whoa, double minor, roughing. That's a little too much, Brandon Hagel. And it just solidifies my point where, depending on who it is, the weight of the penalty is different, which I don't think should be the case. If you replace Brendan Hagel with someone who's a little bit bigger, even in that game, if it's a Carrick, if it's a Sabourin, if it's a Kesselring doing that, if you're just grabbing somebody and throwing bombs, and he's not throwing bombs at some Joe Schmo, some fourth line schmuck, it's Buffalo's best player. It's their captain. And he still only gets 4 minutes in penalties. Like, what are we doing here? Hagel should be thrown out of the game. He should be suspended 3 to 5 games. That's not part of hockey. I'm sorry. That was too much. For me, I was just like, someone A needs to grab Hagel and just teach him a lesson. And maybe that's not hockey either, but I was fuming that Hagel was just skating around willy-nilly after that incident. That's your captain. This is a Lindy Ruff coach team. I am shocked that no one made him hold him account to that. Maybe they will in April. But damn, was I upset about that. And for him to only get a $5,000 fine, it's just laughable. They need to address that fine situation, because a $5,000 fine for Hagel is just like blowing his nose. Like, he could care less. But aside from that play by Brandon Hagel, where it was just like, it's too much. Like, it's too much. It should not have happened. That guy's a hell of a player. Like, I watch Tampa, not as closely as I watch other teams, just because I don't like them that much. He is so good. Like, he is incredible. And I remember when he got traded to Tampa Bay, everybody was up in arms. Like, what are you doing, Breezebois? 2 first-rounders for this guy? Like, it's a little steep. Fast forward to now, Hagel's one of the best players in the league. Like, top 25, you would think? Top 30? Maybe 40? Top 40 players in the league? Like, he's incredible on the forecheck. He hounds the puck. He has a very good offensive touch. And his motor doesn't end. Like, he is a noticeable player out there. Braden Point kind of gets lost. Kucherov is definitely noticeable. He's just so incredibly skilled. Gensel, you lose him a little bit. Hagel, you notice in every zone of the ice. Offensive zone, neutral zone, defensive zone. He is just a water bug out there who has good hockey sense and is just tenacious. He's a hell of a player. So when you look back, it's like, well, you gave up to, you know, 2 first-rounders and ended up being Olivier Moore and Sacha Boisvert for the Chicago Blackhawks. If you were to ask Julien Breezebois if he would do that trade again, hey, you're not going to get this, you know, a pretty good player in Olivier Moore and then a prospect in Sacha Boisvert. Would you do it for Hagel and Taylor Radish? Yeah. Oh, sorry, not Taylor. You gave up Taylor. Would you do it for Hagel in a 4th-rounder? Hell yeah. I would do that trade all day long. Hagel is special, man. He really, really is. Like, that is a great trade for both GMs involved. They really did good work. And now transitioning to current day GMs. This trade deadline. Kind of excited going into this one. A lot of GMs needed to make over their teams. A lot of GMs needed to just fire sale. We need to address some issues. We have a lot of guys that aren't performing. Our team's losing. So we need to just kind of sell everyone or sell somebody. I'm looking at the Rangers. I'm looking at the Leafs. I'm looking at the Devils, potentially the Flyers. Out west, I'm looking at the Canucks and the Flames and the Hawks and the Blues and the Jets. There were a lot of teams that needed a remake. New faces, new places. We'll see how this works out. So coming into this deadline, I was excited. And on the flip side, there were a lot of teams that could use some help. You know, Minnesota try to keep up with Dallas and Colorado. Who were the Edmonton Oilers, the Vegas Golden Knights floundering with their goaltender situation? You know, new teams on the block trying to make their stamp on this Western Conference, Seattle and Utah, maybe LA and San Jose trying to vault themselves into Stanley Cup contention. In the Eastern Conference, young teams maybe get some veteran leadership, maybe get some tertiary scoring. The Montreal Canadiens, the Boston Bruins have a surprisingly solid season. Maybe other teams trying to help their vets who are, you know, last kick at the can, who are surprisingly in playoff contention. The Pittsburgh Penguins, Detroit Red Wings, help those guys out a little bit. And then obviously the perennial contenders in the Eastern Conference loading up for the playoffs, because you would think after years of just falling short, you would realize what you're missing, the Carolina Hurricanes. So I was excited coming into this deadline. Not only that I got to say, you know, see my old bud Tim, and we were on Bleach Report, and I love live streaming. I think it's a lot of fun. But there seemed like a different tone in the Eastern Conference. And I was excited to see how GMs, particularly in the East, would react to that opportunity. Because in the West, I think we can all agree, it's a three-headed monster in the West. It's Colorado, it's Dallas, and it's Minnesota. Central Division is absolutely juiced. One of those teams should come out of the West. I don't think Anaheim or Vegas or Edmonton or any of the other teams in the Pacific can compete with those three teams. They're just too strong. So that's a foregone conclusion. It was just an arms race in the West for those three teams. But in the East, it feels a little different. It feels like this is a year where someone else can step up and grab hold of this conference. You know, there's no Leafs. There's no Panthers. The Capitals are down. The Tampa Bay Lightning, there's a question mark surrounding them. So is this the year for the Red Wings to make that leap? Is this the year for the Sabres? Is it a sneaky year for the Penguins or the Islanders to jump up and, you know, grab hold of this division? Or is this the year for the Carolina Hurricanes to try to finally slay the dragon? Finally take that next step into the Stanley Cup Finals. Win more than one game in the Eastern Conference Finals. Could this be their year? So I was cautiously optimistic heading into this deadline. And I should have known better, because I sat there for hour after hour after hour expecting things to happen, expecting GMs to make a move. And it did not happen. It really did not. There's a couple deals leading up to the, you know, trade deadline. Edmonton goes out and gets Connor Murphy. That's nice. You know, John Carlson goes to Anaheim. That was a shocker. That was a head scratcher. Then, you know, the Sabres get Logan Stanley. They tried to get big defenseman from St. Louis, Colton Parenko. That falls through. And that exposed a whole other issue of GMs and maybe people leaking things to the media when they should. That should have never been released. That's a bad look for the NHL as a whole. But there were some trades leading up to this deadline. I was cautiously optimistic. Connor Garland, friend of the show, gets dealt to Columbus. David Perron goes back to Detroit. So I was getting a little excited. And then the trade deadline morning starts. And it's just like, okay, what are we doing? What are we doing? Nothing happening. And it just stayed that way. You know, obviously a couple moves. Braden Schenn goes to the Islanders. And then you got Justin Falk going to the Red Wings. And then after the fact, you got Nazem Kadri going to the Avalanche. But other than that, that's it. Like a lot of just strange, like AHL guys, fourth line players who might not play in the playoffs. Or it's just like, what are we doing? And it kind of irked me a little bit. Not because I'm a podcaster, not because I'm a pundit or whatever. But if I'm a GM in the NHL and I'm trying to, you know, improve my team, I should be expected to do something. And so that's why my little segment is, these guys need to be fired. Like this is your job. Your job is to improve your team. Your job is to win the Stanley Cup. And if you know it's not happening this year, your job is to game plan for next season. And that means getting prospects. That means getting draft capital. That means shedding salary cap to position yourself for a run for next season. And I'm going to start with the guy who I think should be fired yesterday. It's Stan Bowman with the Edmonton Oilers. So Stan Bowman comes into this season with the enviable position of having Connor McDavid for two more years. Connor McDavid signs a team-friendly deal at 12.5. He still has the two best players on the planet. He's got Evan Bouchard. He's got Stuart Skinner. You know, he rolled back the whole group. Yes, you lost some depth, but you still have an incredible team. Season starts. Edmonton falters. They're struggling. You know, win, lose, win, lose, win, win, win. It's just not a great season for the Edmonton Oilers, and it's glaringly obvious what they need. They need defensive help, and they need goaltending. They're a bad defensive team, like an atrocious defensive team. And to compound that, their goaltender is just garbage, like absolute garbage. So Stan Bowman, before the deadline, he goes out and get Connor Murphy from the Chicago Blackhawks. Great, you know, decent defenseman. You slot him in maybe the second pairing, maybe third pairing. He's a decent defenseman. And then he goes back to the well for the Chicago Blackhawks, and he gets Jason Dickinson and Colton Dock. You know, I don't mind these moves. Gives up a hefty price, a second and a first, and he takes on Andrew Mangiapane for cap relief. But like, that's a lot, a second and a first before the big trade deadline begins. He gets in there early. He likes these guys. And then that's it. And then there's no more moves from Stan Bowman. Like, not one. And when you look at this roster now, you go, this team sucks. Like, they really do. They're not a good team. Obviously top heavy. You got McDavid and Draisaitl and the Nuge and Hyman. Those are great players. But after that, it gets a little thin. Like, you're telling me you're scared of their third and fourth line of Savoy, Dickinson, Kapanen, Colton Dock. You got Trent Frederick, Pod Colson. Like, whoever you want to throw in the third and fourth line, it's not scary. It's downright bad. And then on the back end, you have Ekholm and Bouchard. I get that. Jake Walman has not had that strong of a year. Connor Murphy, then Nurse is down to the third pairing with Ty Eberson. They just get exposed every single game. So it's bad, you guys. And then to make matters worse, we all know what's going on between the pipes. You know, Tristan Jarry sucks. Connor Ingram sucks. They're both bad. There was no help there. There were goaltenders that were available that they could have got out and got. And they just didn't. And who knows? Maybe behind the scenes, Stan Bowman was kicking the tires on other goaltenders, a Binnington, a Bobrovsky. We'll never know. What we do know is that he didn't add anybody. And in my heart of hearts, I do know that Connor McDavid is, he's like, one more year, I'm gone. I've had enough of this. Like, that's it. We are regressing. You honestly think the answer to our question is a Jason Dickinson and a Connor Murphy? Like, get real. All right, moving on. Boston Bruins thought they were going to make a move. Don Sweeney gets Lucas Reichel from the Vancouver Canucks. Like, what the? And these are the moves that I just scratch my head, where I go, why are you doing this? Why is this even a thing? Why are you, Don Sweeney, calling the Vancouver Canucks and asking if Lucas Reichel is available? I don't understand it. I don't. Why? Do you honestly think this guy's going to make your team better? It boggles my mind. So he should be absolutely fired. They had an opportunity. The East is, you know, it's there. It's there for the picking. And the same can be said for Tom Fitzgerald for the New Jersey Devils. You need to revamp this team. You obviously had a down year. Things aren't going your way. You have Jack Hughes, but you also have some guys on the back end who have been thrown around in trade talks for a long time. And as we know, at the deadline, a right-shooting, big defenseman is valuable. And Dougie Hamilton should not be on this team. He should be absolutely traded. The Devils are out of the playoffs. They're in lottery form. They're trying to lose. They're tanking for picks. And you don't go and you go out and trade nobody? Tom Fitzgerald, like, absolutely nobody? What is the reasoning behind this? Are you gearing up for another run for next year? Please tell me if I'm wrong. I don't get it. I don't understand the reasoning by not trading anybody. Like, no deals whatsoever. And you still have no calories, cap space. You still are just mired with injuries. you still have the same decent decor that's aging by the second. You're telling me no one would take Brendan Dillon off your hands? You're telling me no one wanted Dougie Hamilton? Like, those two guys are gone in my eyes. Absolutely gone. You couldn't maybe find a home for a Timo Meier? Man, that one would be a little stretch. But you have to do something to change this roster. And you did absolutely nothing. The fact that he's not getting a little more heat, it's crazy. Because this is a team that was a Stanley Cup contender 2 years ago. Oh, if we stay healthy, we're very, very dangerous. I like this team. And they've just done nothing but lose and fail and get injured. Wash, rinse, repeat. You have to change this roster. You have to do something. So fire Bowman, fire Sweeney, fire Fitzgerald. And everyone's like, well, it's the salary cap. It's the CBA. It's hard to make deals. It's the no move clauses. It's guys had terms on their deal. It's hard to trade when guys have 3-4 years left on their contract. GMs don't want to lose talent. Really? You think so? Well, then how the hell is Chris McFarland doing what he's doing? How? He goes out and gets Nazem Kadri and Nicholas Waugh. Two of the best centermen on the market. Kadri has term left on his contract. Nicholas Waugh was a highly coveted center, and Toronto really, really likes him. But he still managed to go out and fill needs on his team. Very small needs, by the way. Like, minimal needs. And he goes out and knocks it out of the park. Gets a Kadri who slides right into that top line pretty nicely. Gets a Nicholas Waugh who slides into that third line center role pretty nicely. And he doesn't have to pay through the nose for him. He just quietly goes about his business. So tell me how he can do that. McFarland for Colorado can do that, where everybody knows, you know, who he wants. But these other GMs can't do anything. That's the thing. It's they can do something, but they choose not to for whatever reason. And now we're staring on the barrel of a Colorado Avalanche who has McKinnon, Nelson, Nicholas Waugh, Nazem Kadri, potentially for their fourth center. It just is laughable. Maybe Kadri's not a center. I don't know why I keep saying that. But they got McKinnon, Nelson, and Waugh. And then you got Nyquist, and you got Kadri, and Nichushkin, and all these other weapons that they have, and Landeskog. So it's laughable when people say, well, it's really hard to trade. I get that, but it's not impossible. Because the GMs that want to win Stanley Cups, they do it. Look at the Florida Panthers for the last few years. Look at the Tampa Bay Lightning before that. The Colorado Avalanche. These guys make moves. And when they do, they pay off and they win Stanley Cups. So just stop clutching your pearls and saying it's impossible. Because it's definitely possible. Look at the Minnesota Wild. We all knew they were trying to make a big move. And Billy Guerin comes out after the deadline. He's funny. He's like, Chris Drury did not want to trade. Because he was trying to get Vincent Trocheck. Like, there's no secret that he was trying to find a centerman to play with that top line. It just didn't happen. Drury was not in the mood, he said. But he still goes out. He gets Nick Foligno. He gets Bobby Brink. He gets Jeff Petrie. He gets Michael McCarron. Like, he gets pieces that are valuable pieces. Will they be impactful players in the playoffs? Yeah, I bet you they will. They won't be their best players. Bobby Brink is a hell of a player. Nick Foligno oozes personality. He oozes just leadership, intangibles. That's what he is. And then you get Michael McCarron, who's all sandpaper all day. I played with this guy in St. John's. He's got decent hands for a guy who's 6'6", but he's a prick to play against. I'll be completely honest. So how can he do that? How can he go out and make moves? But Stan Bowman makes one trade and that's it. You know, it's just those things. How can the Dallas Stars go out and get Tyler Myers? Or really, really good defense. Go out and get Michael Bunting. So the idea that, oh, it's so hard, we can't make trades, I don't get it, and I don't buy it. And I'll finish off with a couple other GMs that I just think had terrible days. The Philadelphia Flyers, very similar to the New Jersey Devils. And Briere's done a good job. I'm not going to slight him for the years, you know, prior, where he's really tried to revamp this roster and get arena guys and trying to, you know, retool this team. He was dealt an unenviable hand. We had a couple bad contracts, but... you know, you trade Nick DeLore and that's it. You know, and I like the move by Nicky DeLore going to Carolina. I think that was solid. But you have, like, you're trying to revamp this roster. You're trying to make them win. And right now, this isn't a winning team in the NHL. And you do have some asset and some valuable stuff. Like Rasmus Ristolainen, much like Dougie Hamilton, should be gone. he should not be on this team. Like, he has to be traded. I know he has 1 year left on his term, but, like, come on. So I just scratch my head. Like, even a Garnet Hathaway, I know fans like him and they're valuable for their franchise, but at some point you have to have roster turnover and you have to get new blood in there because you can't keep rolling out the same top three lines and top 4D and expect it to be different. It won't. Changing the fourth line and the 5-6 D-men are not going to change your franchise. It's not going to change the outcome of the season. And that's what I think a lot of GMs do. They hold on to their top six, maybe their top nine, and then they just try to fill in the rest. And it's like, oh, it'll be different. The Leafs did that for years. It's like, will it be different? I don't think so. So moving on, some strange moves for me. The LA Kings were just all over this deadline. I did not understand where they were heading. And what they were trying to do. You know, I get a team fighting for the playoffs. I get a team trying to extend their window with their vets. You got Drew Doughty, you got Anze Kopitar. I applaud them for that. But Kenny Holland, like he starts it off by getting Panarin from the New York Rangers. A shocker. I did not see that happening. So I was like, okay, here we go. You know, they're making a move. Kenny Holland putting his imprint on this team. He became GM just last summer. And then he follows it up by trading Warren Fogle, trading Corey Perry, and then you just sit there and do nothing. So I was just scratching my head like, what are we? They're outside the playoffs right now looking in. And then at the very last second, he trades for Scott Laughton from the Toronto Maple Leafs. I like this move. For a third rounder, that's a pretty good value for Scott Laughton. Obviously, expiring contract. If they make the playoffs, it becomes a second. But not a bad move by Kenny Holland. But what are we doing? Like, you traded away Corey Perry. You traded away Warren Fogle. And you're replacing them with a Scott Laughton. No, I don't mind this move, but it's just head-scratching. It's like, what direction are we heading? Are we adding? Are we trading? Are we punting to next year? Are we making a push for the playoffs? It was very, very strange, but it's kind of par for the course for Kenny Holland, where it's just like nobody really knows what he's doing. But in my eyes, it's just what are we doing here? And if, last but not least, Patrick Alvin with the Vancouver Canucks is a very bad GM. He has mismanaged this roster ever since he became GM. He is just terrible in the press. He's terrible in negotiations. He is bad asset management. He's just all in all a bad GM. But coming into this deadline, there was hope. Like, okay, we have some pieces that we could get rid of. Evander Kane, we can trade. Maybe get rid of a Jake DeBrusk. Maybe Elias Pettersson. Time for him to move to greener pastures. We got some pieces in the back end. This team is atrocious. Like, they're last place in the NHL. No signs of getting better whatsoever. It's time to revamp this roster. And we have some good young players that other teams would be interested in. And so he goes out and he swings for the fences. He trades Lucas Reichel and Connor Garland. That's it. One guy, Connor Garland, who is just the heartbeat of your team, doesn't give up. Great player that's going to be fantastic for the Blue Jackets, and you get a second and a third rounder for him. Woof. And then you trade Lucas Reichel for a sixth rounder, because why? Oh, I don't understand. But that's it. That's it. That's all. No more. And that's it for the Vancouver Canucks. So next year, when the season opens up, they will have the exact same roster that they have right now. They will have the exact same roster that they had when they started the season, minus Connor Garland. And everybody will go, oh, I hope we play better. Oh, boy, I hope things are different. They won't be. Thatcher Demko will still be in and out of the lineup. He'll be hurt. Filip Hedl probably won't be playing. Pettersson will still be bitching and complaining. DeBrusk will still be a huge disappointment. Brock Besser will still be a decent option as a goal scorer. And they'll still be in last place. So the fact that he still has a job is shocking. He should be fired. Maybe this offseason they're going to relieve him of his duties. I hope they do, because shit, man, like, do something. Like, it's just, it irks me a little bit, but whatever. It doesn't irk me how the deadline ended. It's going to be exciting out west. Dallas Stars, Colorado Avalanche, Minnesota Wild. Tell me who you think's coming out of that division, because it's just it's just incredible, those three teams. In the Eastern Conference, tell me who you think is coming out of the East. I think Buffalo has it wrapped up right now. And Carolina, I didn't touch on them too much because they didn't do anything. Add a goal scorer, for Pete's sake. Go out, pay through the nose, go get a Robert Thomas. Mortgage your future. Like, go all in. Try to get someone who's a difference maker. They didn't do anything. Do they have enough to get through the Eastern Conference, even though it's wide open right now? Tell me in the comments below who you think is coming out of the East, which one of those juggernauts is coming out of the West. All in all, I was left a little disappointed at this deadline. But I'm not disappointed in you. I appreciate your support. I will be back later this week with an interview with Wayne Primeau. Sleepy good career. Look up this guy's stats. Sleepy, sleepy good. Went to the Stanley Cup Finals with the Buffalo Sabres. Played with the Maple Leafs for a while. Good dude, too. Looks like Clark Kent. So we'll talk to him on Thursday. And that's it, everybody. We'll talk to you next time. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. Cheers. John Scott.